Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono.
You don't have anything. You can't escape. Take the sack, live to play another down, and move on.
We're also joined on a regular basis by 49ers quarterback C.J. Beathard.
Being the backup quarterback, you've got to prepare as if you are the guy because you're a play away from being in there.
49ers Extra is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Today we'll talk to Steve about the 49ers' 28-18 loss to the Cardinals, and Ann Killian from the San Francisco Chronicle will be joining us. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information.
You know, I think it was a tough blow early in the year, as everyone knows, losing McKinnon and then losing our starting quarterback. So I do think that takes a toll, and I think everyone understands that. But that doesn't mean that we can't win games. And I believe, you know, I think we've played in two games now without Jimmy, and I think we have been more than capable of winning both of those games, and we haven't gotten done. I know we've been through some adversity. I know this is the hand that we've been dealt, and I think we have the people in our organization. I think we have the players. I think we have strong enough people who can deal with it and man up and find a way to win. It's never easy. It definitely gets harder when you do have injuries and things like that. But we have people in here that can win games. We could have won that game yesterday, and we came up short, and that starts with me.
That's 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan. And Steve, seems to me like the 49ers should have won that game on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, when you turn the ball over five times and you don't force any turnovers, you're not going to win many of those games. And to me, that was really the big key, the big blow in the game for San Francisco.
It really was. Five turnovers. And then I think just, at least offensively, just not making them play when you need to make a play. Yes, CJ's throws haven't been the best, but we've got to make some catches. That seems to be one of the issues. I know we've talked about it. But I think kind of really similar to last week, although I didn't think we played as well yet on Sunday as we did last week. Just overall, maybe that's just because of the turnovers, but kind of both games that I think we should have won. I think from the clip you just played, the two key words that Kyle said is we need to man up. Man, I think there's a few. I'm not naming any names, but there's a few guys that I can see that need to step it up.
Well, I think there are turnovers too, Steve, that don't hurt you so bad, and then there are other turnovers that just kill you, and that seemed to be the case for the 49ers. Yeah, I mean, you start with the one, the Garcon, you know, not making the catch. It's right in his hands. It becomes an interception. You know, that's right. A killer. And then, of course, near the end of the game, the one that really was the game changer, because the 49ers had a chance there near the end of the game, but the fumble caused by the blitzer, Hassan Reddick. I mean, to me, on that play, and I wanted to ask you specifically about that play, first of all, Steve, CJ looked like he wanted to throw to Trent Taylor over the middle, and I actually watched that play about six times. You know, it looked to me like Taylor kind of stopped running his route, and I know CJ said something about Taylor being held on that play. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's back to what we've talked about a few times already this year of, you know, those guys getting off the man-to-man coverage, bump man-to-man where people are grabbing. There's no question. People are grabbing, people are holding. That happens on every play. It gets called every once in a while. But I do kind of remember Taylor like throwing up his hands like, come on. Live, I didn't watch a replay of it. But that you know, had happened too many times, obviously three times to CJ, where he's getting that ball swatted out of his hand. That's guys not being open. I think too, I'd love to see CJ stepping up in the pocket, getting a little bit more rhythm into his throws. I think some of them are offline just because of that. He's backing up instead of going forward, from what I could tell, you know, watching, you know, just watching live, you know, sitting in the stand. So statistically, they did a lot of great things, but I don't know. If I didn't look at the statistics, I wouldn't have thought that from watching the game. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, yeah, because when you do look at a stat sheet, you're just wowed. I mean, 33 first downs. That's the ties the second most in franchise history. 447 yards.
I know. I mean, 10 for 17 on third down. I mean, that's
right.
That's you don't. I mean, if you don't turn the ball over, you don't lose a football game.
No, I mean, they tripled Arizona as far as running yards, rushing yards. They yeah. doubled them as far as time of possession. You know, all those stats.
I mean, everything. It's. I mean, other than, of course, five turnovers. but yeah, just you know, everybody's like, oh, the defense. I don't think the defense is playing that bad. There aren't really any particular plays that stand out to me. Like I said, I didn't watch it on television, so you don't have the benefit of the replay. But I don't remember. Nothing stands out to me about, you know, huge missed tackles or.
Just the first play, though. The first play.
Well, the first play, and the safety. I don't know who it was at three, but you know he bites.
Colbert, exactly. Yeah, Colbert. I guess made the big mistake there because it was he. I guess he was covering Larry Fitzgerald, and he was running sort of underneath, and that just left Akello Witherspoon. On his own, and he took a really bad angle.
Playing outside technique, yeah.
Did you see the angle he took on that? I mean, he looked like a center fielder that was lost, like a rookie who has no idea what he's doing.
He was not tracking the ball.
No.
Exactly. That's why I say he seemed to be coming forward, biting on something else, and then realized that, you know, that Witherspoon was in trouble. And he came completely flat on the angle. I mean, he might have even been going downhill a little bit.
Yeah, and then it was forget it. It's just like the center fielder.
that really hurt because Niners get the ball and go right down the field with a really nice drive. You know, opening drive, exactly what you want to do offensively, establish the game. You know, go 10 plays, you know, take 5 minutes off the clock. I don't know exactly how much they took off, but, I mean, it was just a really good drive. And with a couple penalties, you know, at very inopportune times.
Yeah, they had a nice short passing game going. It looked like, you know, they were getting Juszczyk the ball in creative ways. They were making it easy, I thought, for C.J. Beathard with a lot of those little screens, those little passes underneath.
Yep.
I mean, he wasn't having to worry about a pass rush. I mean, maybe you wonder, like, why didn't they continue to do that? Although, you know, of course, Arizona's going to read that after a while.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I kind of think that they did. They just, I mean, rushed for 220 yards. You know, that was... Or no, 147 yards.
147, but I mean the big deal there was that the injury to Breida, He's so important now. And then he goes down in the first quarter, and Mostert fumbles on his first carry. That was a killer, too. That led to a touchdown, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just at the end of the day, it was, like I said, it was penalties, and just there's a few throws that I'd like to see better. And I think CJ can do that with, you know, climbing more in the pocket and having rhythm into his throws. He's seemed to be, to me, backing up too much. And then there's some guys that just, they need to make a catch.
I want to ask you about that in the pocket, because one of the big plays in the game in the third quarter was the fumble that Chandler Jones caused. He got around Joe Staley, and, you know, Staley sort of took the blame a little bit for that. But at the same time, Mark Schlereth on the telecast pointed out that CJ needs to step up in the pocket there. What was your opinion on that?
That one's all on CJ. Because that's exactly what a left tackle does. I mean, he gets a couple punches on that guy. He feels that he's going upfield and just ride him by the quarterback. And CJ, he did step up once, I think, but he's just got to know that, you know, he's already on to his second – he's already stepped up once, so he's now going to his number two receiver. He's got to go again. And if he steps up one more step, that guy's not even in the play, you know. And that's one of the big plays that that I saw, and then I realized that, you know, he's got to keep climbing in the pocket. And because he runs well with the ball, you know, if he doesn't have it. So those running lanes are in the B gaps, you know, as they widen, and so are the throwing lanes. Basically, the running lanes and the throwing lanes are the same lanes that, as you step up in the pocket, the lanes widen.
Well, I want to know, Steve, is that something where you normally just step up in the pocket no matter what, or do you have a feel for it? Or also, is it because a guy like Chandler Jones is there, you just know this guy's going to get around there and he's going to be behind you? How does it factor in as far as how you figure out, you know, stepping up in the pocket?
In my mind, it's, yes, it's a feel, but you are always, at least the way we were trained, you were always climbing in the pocket. You know, if your first read is a no hitch throw, you know, on a 5-step drop, that's fine, or even a 7-step drop. 3 steps don't necessarily count in that way, because that ball's got to be gone.
Yeah, you got to just get rid of it, right?
But if it's a no hitch throw, it's got to be out. But if that throw is not there, then yes, you're in order to make your next throw, you're one more step up into the pocket. If you're on to your third receiver, you're now 2 steps up into the pocket. You may even be moving forward, you know, starting to run and looking for your third or fourth guy. So I'm just not seeing that as much as I personally would like to see it. You know, if I were coaching them, that's what I think I would be talking to them about, other, you know, not having watched the film. It's just so helpful to Joe Staley or McGlinchey for that matter. I mean, those tackles, the way those outs, you know, those edge rushers rush, you know, they're just making sure they don't get beat inside. And then if they rush up the field, just run them by the quarterback. That just let their momentum take them out of the play.
Well, that sounds logical, but what about the blitzes? Okay, let's get back to that play, you know, really the decisive play, as I mentioned, you know, the Reddick blitz. Picking up that blitz, you know, and I mentioned already that, you know, Taylor, maybe he got held, but is that something where, hey, you just got to get rid of it no matter what? If the guy's open or not open, just get rid of it rather than risk what happened there with the strip sack?
That's, you know, if it's a 5-man blitz, you usually have 6 guys usually have six guys blocking them. So you still have the advantage. Now we, you know, five guys blitzing, they're probably playing man free. Receivers have to get off the bump and run, get away from the man coverage. If it's a sixth man and they're playing man with no safety, yeah, there's a free guy coming somewhere, and you have to have a hot guy. You've got to dump it to a back. You've got to get it to a shallow crosser, somebody that's looking at you quickly. The five-man blitzes are harder, maybe just because, yes, you got an extra rusher, but they can still play, you know, they can still play some zone in front of you or play zone behind that rush. Should be picked up, but your internal quarterback internal clock has to go a little faster to know that you got to get it out of your hand.
What happens after a game like this in practice? And the 49ers have an extra day because they have a Monday night game at Green Bay. But you move the ball so well. The defense outside of that first play played really well. So it really was all about turning it over. I mean, is that the emphasis a lot of times when you have a game like this? Like, hey, how can we prevent it? We've got to protect the football here.
Yeah, it's going to be talked about from the quarterback perspective. If I was a head coach, yes, I would address it, but I'm not gonna harp on it because most of the turnovers, three of the turnovers, are CJ. And he touches the ball every play.
Right. Two of the fumbles and one of the interceptions.
Yeah. Marty Schottenheimer would crucify him, but having been a quarterback, I want him to be careful with it, but I don't want him thinking about it.
Oh, so Schottenheimer would be, he'd be all over him and he couldn't get away from it?
It'd be kill. He's a defensive coach, so he doesn't understand how a quarterback thinks. So yes, I would talk about it, you know, maybe to the whole team, to the offense for sure. But then if I'm then coaching CJ, I'm just talking about ways to, one, get back up in the pocket, two, having two hands on the ball when you're moving in the pocket, you know, things like that. How do we not – taking the positive, I guess, approach to how do we solve this issue? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
There's going back to quarterback touches the ball every play. He unfortunately is going to have more turnovers than anybody else on the team. Period. That's just, he's going to have interceptions. He's going to have fumbles. That's just the way it is. So I don't want them thinking about it, but I want them to just understand understand ways that he can help protect himself and protect the ball. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I guess it also makes sense that you only have a second-year quarterback, too. I mean, it's not like you're going to just blast the guy like you would maybe a veteran who's making mistakes. You could say, hey, what's wrong with you? I mean, this guy's learning on the job.
He's totally learning on the job, and I think that he played better 2 weeks ago than he did this past week. And I think that he, you know, some of that rush – toward the end of the game, maybe the end of the third, probably most of the fourth, where he felt like he was on his heels throwing some balls that were not accurate, not in the spot where they needed to be, and I think he'd be the first to admit that. you know, that may have, those things may have happened just from psychologically from the first three quarters of the game and the pass rush that, you know, that they had.
Yeah. And Chandler Jones was everywhere, man.
Yeah, he was. So I'm defending him, which I'm going to because I was a quarterback, so I get it.
Right.
And I guess back to my point of if I was coaching him, you know, these are some of the things that I would, you know, have him work on during the week of, you know, stepping up a little bit more in the pocket, help the tackles out, help yourself out, get in, you know, it's a pocket for, it's called a pocket for a reason because it's the safest place.
That should be right.
it's not safe on the top of it. And if you get to the top of it being where the tackles are aimed, you know, at 7 yards basically. And then it's, you know, if you get to the bottom of it, then it's, as you climb in the pocket and you get to the bottom of it, then you're, you know, then you got to get the hell out of there.
Well, I'm sure he's working on that this week.
Yeah, I mean, he is. It's not like he's not. I'm, you know, I think he can be, and I think he will be better at it. Once he, you know, he watches the film, go, I think his throws will be, there's no question in my mind his throws will be more accurate.
Here's the biggest issue, though, Steve, for a team that's now 1-4. It's the depth of talent, because when you have injuries like this, and I know you've been on some teams where you start losing players and you just wonder about the confidence of the team. I mean, you lost your starting quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. Before the season even started, you lost your starting running back in McKinnon. And although Breida's done a nice job, now he's hurting. Marquise Goodwin, who really was your number one receiver, he's out. Like, I mean, it's just all of these injuries. You know, Sherman's been playing banged up, all the linemen that have been banged up, all of that happening. I mean, it's got to be hard for this team to stick together. And I know it's still early in the season, but they're going to have to put some wins together. And you look at the schedule, and it's not easy. They're playing at Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers on a Monday night. And then the Rams are coming here.
Who's not a happy camper right now.
No, he's not a happy camper after that last game and the field goal kicker. Mason Crosby missed four field goals and an extra point.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean,
that dude's money.
So you got that game, and then you got the Rams, who might be the best team in the NFL, or at least one of the best teams in the NFL. So, I mean, this is just a tall order right now, it seems.
It is. I'm going to go back to Kyle's two words. Everybody's going to have to man up. And we talked about this after Jimmy G got hurt, that everybody's got to step it up another notch. And if they're if they are truly united, which I mean, I think they are. I think they're playing hard for one another, and I kind of hope that Sunday was, I'm going to call it, the lowest point of the season.
Yeah, because they should have won that game against an 0-4 team. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that's the lowest point, and that they realize that, yeah, they all need to step it up a notch and move forward. And doesn't matter who it is, you know, bring in the next guy and let's just move forward.
Yeah, I'm curious too. Does it take a little time for the whole team, especially the offense, to get behind a quarterback like that after an injury? I mean, you know, you came in that situation. You know, all of a sudden there's the injured quarterback. You're the backup. You've got to rally the troops. I mean, was there an extra bit of energy that you had to bring, or did you think about that when you first came in to be the starter?
No. And I know that we talked about this after Jimmy got hurt, that, you know, my whole mindset was, okay, I'm you know, I got to replace Joe, or Steve, and for that matter, Steve was replacing Joe, and I was replacing Steve. But, you know, I'm trying to go in and run this offense as seamlessly different from from them running it. You know, I'm trying to make it be as similar to Joe as possible.
And once that happens, everybody kind of rallies behind that, you know, even though there are injuries.
Because that's the way he ran it is what everybody knows and what everybody expects. So my job is to go in there and run it as close to what he did as possible.
Right. I mean, that sounds like it would be in any business. Like, let's say that, you know, somebody was out of the office for a month or whatever. They were on leave. You wouldn't want to come in and just make all these changes if you were the guy replacing that employee.
Right. Right. Exactly. You're trying to make it seem like there's no difference.
Right. Well, hopefully CJ has a little more progress coming up here for this Monday night game. Look forward to talking to you about it next week, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. Coming up, we'll hear from Ann Killian from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. There's more to tell you about as far as my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. 49ers fans from outside the Bay Area, listen up. TPC Harding Park has a great deal for you when you are planning your trip to Levi's Stadium to see the 49ers. While you're in town, take advantage of Golf the Gridiron, featuring discounted tee times and free club rentals. Visit tpc.com and click on special offers for tee time deals at San Francisco's own TPC Harding Park. Ann Killian from the San Francisco Chronicle joins us now. And Ann, before we start talking about the wreckage that is the 49ers right now, I wanted to ask you about something that Steve Bono tuned me in on. He told me that you went to UCLA together and you were on the same dorm, which I had no idea. I mean, that must have been kind of fun to be around Steve Bono and, I don't know, maybe some other UCLA players back in those days.
Well, Steve Bono was big man on campus, so, you know, I'm sure he doesn't remember me, but I remember him. And, those were the days of Bono and Rick Neuheisel. UCLA was pretty good then, and I'm not going to talk about how they are right now. So, the football team was whenever I was in a class with a football player or a basketball player, it was very interesting because, you know, They were famous in their own right. It's that kind of a campus. So, all eyes on Steve wherever he went.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool coincidence, and we just heard from him. So we did dissect the game, the loss against Arizona, which, you know, it was pretty surprising. Even though the 49ers have been injured, to go up against a team that's 0-4 and lose at home the way they did, I found it to be, you know, just disappointing overall, because even though you've got these backup players in there, you still figure that you're going to be able to win that game, and it doesn't work out for them.
Yeah, I thought we were kind of done with this almost unwatchable style of football, that we witnessed so much of the last few years under Kyle Shanahan, and it was kind of it was a big bummer. It felt like turn back the clock day. Just really bad, bad football, pretty much on both sides of the ball. Both teams just lifeless, not good football. And there are a lot of backups on offense. There aren't that many backups on defense. So there's some problems going on with this team.
Yeah, and as you pointed out in your column on Monday, there's a paragraph that I really kind of point to. You're talking about the team being far from ready to contend and how they don't have the depth or the talent, and how the five wins at the end of last season were more of an illusion, because a lot of people were looking at that and saying, okay, this team is going to be really good. And even without Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe they're still going to sort of build on what they did at the end of last season. And now we're not seeing that.
Well, I think that last season, you know, there was so much excitement about getting Jimmy Garoppolo, as well there should have been. And then they rattle off, you know, some wins. But let's be honest, most of the teams that they beat at the end of the season, their fate was sealed one way or the other, either way. So those games are a different kind of game, a different kind of mentality than when you start a season fresh and you're battling, you know, for position and you're trying to establish yourself. And I think that, yes, they lost Garoppolo, which is a huge blow. I mean, there's no doubt, not that they would have been contending for the playoffs really this year, but at least he would have gotten an entire year of playing in the system. He's never played for a full year anywhere since college. So it would have been important for him, important for the team. It's a huge blow. But I think what we've seen even before he got injured was that this team isn't ready. I mean, there are holes all over the place. Yes, some of it right now is because of injury, but also it's because some of the players they're relying on are either injury prone or old. And like I said, on defense, yeah, the secondary, there's been some injuries, but we know the secondary isn't that good anyway. And there aren't a lot of injuries on the linebacking core or in the defensive line. So the defense hasn't been that impressive. I think there's just a lot of holes. I think people are so hungry. The 49er fan base is so hungry and frustrated after, you know, the past 20 years, the one bright spot was the Harbaugh years. That got yanked out from underneath them. And people were like, okay, now we're on. We're going to turn this thing around. This is it. And, you know, I think it was just a little delusional. There was just too much hype about something that wasn't fully baked yet, not even nearly baked.
Well, do you also feel like, you know, when you're looking at Kyle Shanahan and you're looking at John Lynch and you're thinking about, okay, year one, they're going to get a pass almost no matter what. They're trying to build their own thing here. And now in year two, even though the injuries, like we talked about, not just Jimmy Garoppolo, by the way, I mean, McKinnon, Goodwin being out, all these guys being out, Breida now doubtful, you know, all that happening on offense, but are they not really going to get a pass now? Because now, you know, this is more of their team. These are the guys that they are assembling.
Well, they are, and these are their guys, and no, they're not going to get the kind of pass they got last year. Nobody expected anything, which is another reason that those five wins at the end of the season became so inflated. But I think that they're in the second year of a six-year contract, but which is great for them, but the 49er fan base and the outside forces are in the fourth or fifth year of relentless losing, terrible situation. So that's the contract that actually has to do with who's exasperated, where the pressure is coming from. And, you know, again, you saw on Sunday, that place was, I don't know, two-thirds full, maybe?
Yeah, right.
You know, the fans aren't showing up. There's already, you know, we're in early October. There's already a sense the season is over. There's going to be more pressure to bear because we did think that they had done a good job last year and that there was going to be a corner turned. And now, you know, some of John Lynch's draft picks are not looking so great. Now we're further into it. Now there's only 11 guys on the team that are left over from the past, only a handful of starters. And so it is their team. And if there's a lack of depth and a proneness to injury and all those things, that starts to fall on the people in charge. And just like it did on Trent Baalke and Jim Harbaugh back in the day, and before that on Mike Nolan and Mike Singletary and, you know, I mean, it ends up being the people in charge's fault. So, I think that the day of the free pass is over for these guys. And, I mean, you could tell when Shanahan spoke after both of the last two games. There's a frustration level with him. He thought they were going to be better. He thought they were going to be more effective, even despite injuries. So, yeah, I mean, there's just not a great feeling around the team right now.
Let's talk about C.J. Beathard, because I don't think it's all his fault, you know, the 49ers lost that game. Although, you know, there were some turnovers in there that he maybe could have avoided. But you've got receivers dropping balls and sometimes turning into interceptions. You've got receivers that aren't even getting open a lot of the time. So, you know, I don't know that the 49ers think real hard about getting another quarterback in. I mean, I know they worked out some quarterbacks, but how do you see that situation? And also, how do you see the wide receiver situation playing out? Because it seems like there is an upgrade needed. I mean, Kittle is the top guy, and he's a tight end.
Yeah, well, on C.J. Beathard, I think that I was down at the San Diego game, his first start, and Chargers game, not San Diego.
We're all doing that.
And he looked good. tough guy. You know, that was the theme of the day. He stands in there. He takes the hits. He's pretty calm. You know, he's kind of one of those slow breather guys that doesn't get too rattled. That's all good, but he's still a really young guy. I don't know if he's ever going to be an NFL starter. He could be a serviceable backup, but he's also taking a pounding. And I think they're absolutely bananas insane to not have a third quarterback in there. And I don't care who it is. I know who I'd like to see, but that's a whole different story. But I think they're crazy that they don't go out and sign someone, because it does not take a lot of imagination after watching the last two games to think that C.J. Beathard's going to get knocked out, and then you've got this undrafted free agent Nick Mullins who's going to come in and really, you know, talk about deer in the headlights, really isn't going to know what to do. And then what? I mean, it's just kind of crazy to me that they're doing this without a safety net. It seems odd, to say the very least. And then in terms of the receiver core, you know, the receiver core has been such an issue for this team for so many years. And, yes, Goodwin's out. That's a bummer. Garcon has been, you know, he's back this year. He's been not terribly effective. Some of the younger guys, I mean, they got burned. You know, Pettis was hurt. But I don't know. I mean, receiving has... There's no depth there, I think that it is an issue that has needed to be addressed for a while through different regimes, and it still needs to be addressed.
Well, I guess it's hard to not get into a heavy duty discussion about it, but if you're mentioning Colin Kaepernick, which, you know, that's what you were saying, you know, as far
I
as
alluded
the quarterback.
To
yeah,
Colin
you alluded,
Kaepernick.
Right, you alluded without saying his name, but, you know, I'm with you on that. I think that he would help, but I guess, you know, right from the get-go with Kyle Shanahan, he didn't feel like he fit into his system. Do you buy that?
Yeah, no, I don't really buy it, because Kyle Shanahan's really smart, so he can design a system to fit anyone. And even if it's a system that only, you know, certain plays are designed for what Colin Kaepernick does best, obviously he had Griffin in Washington, so he knows how to use a mobile quarterback. And also, I just think, like, let's get some excitement. You know, like this is going to be going on 2 years of just death at the quarterback position. And right. Yes, they expected to have Garoppolo, and that's a bummer, but I don't know. I know that they're trying to build something, and they have their blueprint, and Kaepernick doesn't fit into their blueprint, but throw the fans a bone. There needs to be some excitement. There needs to be a reason to watch, and right now there's already in week five, there's very little reason to watch. And plus, here's another thing I think. Jed York got a huge, huge kudos for abstaining. The definition of abstaining is basically doing nothing on the national anthem policy of the league.
Right.
And he's, you know, vocally supported Kaepernick in the past. You know, put your money where your mouth is. Why don't you bring him in? Or at least give the guy a tryout. The guy took this team to a Super Bowl, almost got them to a second one. Give him a tryout. At least bring him in and see if there's something there that you can, a way to fit him in. But they seem kind of adamant that they're not going to open that box. I think Kyle might be okay with it. I'm not sure if John Lynch would be okay with it when we're talking about politically, but I'm not sure about that. But Kyle has been vocally supportive of, you know, the issue, the protest, everything else. So I don't know. I just think right now it's like we have, what, 11 games left?
Right. Yeah, 11 games left.
Are we excited about those 11 games?
Well,
that is a long season left. And, you know, already getting, I mean, how embarrassing it to get flexed out of a game, you know, for the Bengals. My goodness.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They had all these primetime games coming up. But, yeah, I mean, the Raiders game, that all of a sudden is just, yeah, it's not a highlight. And, you know, you got the next two games against Green Bay on the road on a Monday night, and then the Rams, who are world beaters, right after that. It's just, it is going to be an uphill climb, it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, again, John and Kyle, I have faith in them. I think they're good at their jobs. They have a plan. They got 6-year contracts for a reason, that they know that this is going to be a long, slow build. But at the same time, you've got people who are in up to their necks for tickets and a fan base that, you know, is used to, or, you know, not used to winning now, but has a history of winning in the past and is frustrated. And I just feel like there needs to be something that's exciting for them. And right now it just feels like more torture, another really, really, really long season.
So you're telling me that torture works for the Giants, but it doesn't work for the 49ers.
It worked in 2010. It didn't work for the Giants the last couple of years. That was just plain old torture, not fun torture.
Right. And thanks a lot. I always enjoy reading all of your columns. And thanks a lot for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
That's Ann Killian from the San Francisco Chronicle. I want to thank her and Steve Bono for joining us today here on 49ers Extra. We'll be back again next Tuesday to talk about the Monday night game in Green Bay. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com.